Are you ready? It's time for On the Double with the Double S Express. Great sports talk and big-time guests with Sean Wally and Sean Boyd on the Double with the Double S Express.
Welcome to On the Double with the Double S Express, show number 32. Sean Wally alongside Sean Boyd. Mr. Boyd, what is going on?
Well, you know, right now there is a huge game going on that we are stepping in the middle of, Sean Wally. And of course, what I'm talking about is the San Francisco 49ers, their last regular season game at Candlestick Park. And, you know, I love these types of things because a lot of times, Sean Wally, people talk to us and they say, man, why in the world do you guys go up against Monday Night Football? And, you know, we haven't figured out the reason, a good answer, Sean. But, you know, at the same time, we get a chance to, you know, take a look at all things sports. We have a lot of things in front of us. Our crack staff always gives us some great information. And so right now it's San Francisco down at the half, 10-3 to the Atlanta Falcons. Very interesting.
Well, one thing we can say about going up against Monday Night Football is tonight's the last night for that in 2013. This is the final Monday night game for ESPN and the NFL tonight.
Yeah, and you know, they're doing a very good job, of course, ESPN putting on Monday Night Football. And, you know, it's a very big tribute to Candlestick Park. Of course, there's a lot of nostalgia involved, and we've been talking about that for the past few weeks. And they're doing an awesome job in showing some of the great 49ers, you know, plays and triumphs and things that have come into fruition since the inception of Candlestick Park. And so, yeah, it's been a great watch so far.
So with Candlestick Park closing its doors here shortly and this potentially being the final home game ever for the 49ers in Candlestick Park, definitely the last regular season home game, you're a guy, Sean Boyd, that has been to Candlestick a lot as a member of the media working for the various networks. What are your thoughts on Candlestick probably going away and this maybe being it?
Well, of course, they're talking about the demolition of Candlestick next year. And that's something that, again, we're far too familiar with, watching the Kingdome being imploded. You know, it's kind of a bittersweet type of thing. I believe one of the 49ers said, you know, it may be a dump, but it's our dump. And, you know, I thought about that and I thought, man, what a weird thing to say. But at the same time, you know, it's true. It is, you know, there are some great memories that I have, of course, you know, getting a chance to see a lot of the great NFL players that come in and out. And, you know, at the same time, it's, I feel good that, you know, Candlestick has served its purpose. Of course, 5 Super Bowls for the San Francisco 49ers. And now they're moving into some new digs here next year. And so, you know, that's the sweet part. But, you know, there are some great memories of yesteryear, you know, being at 49er games.
And it's been a wild weekend again for the NFL and sports all around. And you know, that's looking like it's continuing here tonight with, as you mentioned, the Falcons ahead 10-3 over the Niners. And the Falcons have nothing to play for except pride in their jobs. So you would think the Niners would come out swinging and put up a little bit more of a fight than we've seen here in the first half.
Well, you've heard that old adage, we play for pride. And that's what, not Arizona, but Atlanta is playing for. They're playing for pride. And they're still a great football team. You know, let's not, you know, mix words or make no bones about it. These guys are a great football team. I thought at the beginning of the season, and I've said this before, that I felt like Atlanta would be the team to go to the Super Bowl. And, you know, for whatever reason, things didn't materialize. Lots of injuries happened with Julio Jones. Of course, you know, Steven Jackson, he's playing tonight for the first time in a while. And so, you know, Atlanta just didn't show up, you know, all season, but that doesn't mean that they're not a good enough team to beat San Francisco, and they're showing that they're playing well tonight.
A lot of interesting games in the NFL yesterday as the Cincinnati Bengals finally decide to show up and show that they might be one to contend with in the AFC as they move to 10-5 with a 42-14 whooping of the Vikings.
Yeah, you know, when you get to week 16 and week 17, you have teams vying for a position, for a playoff position. And, you know, actually, you know, again, the pride thing comes into place again. Man, who saw Cincinnati doing that to Minnesota? I know Minnesota with head coach Leslie Frazier, you know, has some doubts as far as his returning next year, which, you know, I think is a bad idea. I think Leslie Frazier is doing a great, well, I can't say a great job, but he's doing a good enough job to actually, you know, deserve one more year, at least move into the new digs that Minnesota will have in a couple of years, or I believe next year. And so, man, but I didn't see Cincinnati coming out and doing that. Marvin Lewis has had his team definitely clicking on all cylinders yesterday.
Sean, what's your take on the large number of teams that had a chance this week to lock up a playoff spot, possibly win a division, and they just fell flat on their face? You had Green Bay losing. You had Miami get skunked by the Buffalo Bills. It's just amazing how these teams could have locked up the postseason, and the Lions, you know, they're completely out of the playoffs now because they lost to the Giants and the way the other games fell. And the Ravens had a shot, and they didn't even show up against the Patriots. The Bears last night, 54-11, they fall to the Eagles. What's it going to take for these teams to wake up?
Well, actually, you know, what it proves is that these guys are human. And when they look into the camera and they say, hey, we take it one game at a time, and there's no pressure, we're just going to go out there and play our game, they're only telling half the truth. To be honest with you, they're, you know, scared beyond belief because they don't know what to expect. You know, there's that huge unknown, and these guys go out and play, and when they play the game, you know, they tighten up a little bit. They want to make sure that everything is so accurate that they overplay and they press a little bit. And so, yeah, I don't believe it for one second when these guys say, hey, you know, it's just another game. We're going to go out there and do our thing. We're going to play our game, because it's not true. The humanistic side proves it, which is the reason why these games are close and which is the reason why a lot of these teams don't close out.
We have a lot of Raider Nation followers on Twitter and listeners of the show, and the autumn winds are swirling a little bit with some possible issues with whether or not Dennis Allen will return. What have you heard and what do you know being down near Raider Town?
Well, you know, the big sentiment is, of course, let's face it, you know, the Raider Nation hasn't gotten over the fact that John Gruden left to go to Tampa Bay and, of course, play against the Oakland Raiders in that Super Bowl in 2002. And, you know, it's something that, you know, it was the last time that Oakland actually had a winning season. And so, you know, there's a lot of love for John Gruden. There's a lot of respect. I mean, he pretty much epitomized what the Raider Nation and what the black hole is about. Of course, you know, the comparisons with him and Chucky, and, you know, you put them side by side and they look like twins. There's the rumors going around that, you know, Mark Davis, the owner of the Oakland Raiders, was actually talking to John Gruden as far as last year to see if he could come back. And, you know, for Dennis Allen, I just think that, you know, what he needs to do is he needs to continue coaching the team. He needs to block out everything, and that's easier said than done. You know, being a head coach, you know, at the high school levels myself, you know, you understand that, you know, those types of things, you know, won't happen. You know, there are a lot of stresses. But I just think that Dennis Allen needs to do his job, continue to develop the organization along with Reggie McKenzie, and we'll see. I mean, what we're looking at, you know, as far as the Raider Nation is concerned, is at least $63 million going in dead money next year. And who knows what can happen? You know, if Oakland makes the right moves, brings in the right personnel, could be a different ball club. And, you know, you don't want to make the comparisons to the Kansas City Chiefs, but right now that's the comparison. It could be a Kansas City Chiefs type of a season next year if all things go well.
And real quick, Sean, before our first big-time guest, what is your take on the switcheroo at quarterback for the final game in Week 17?
You know, that part is a head-scratcher because it seemed like Dennis Allen was, you know, digging his heels in and saying, hey, Matt McGloin is going to be my guy, and, you know, we're going to ride this thing and see what goes into next year, maybe have a quarterback competition next year. You know, this one is kind of tough. You know, it's tough because, you know, this plays on the psyche of both quarterbacks. You have Terrell Pryor that hasn't played in a few weeks or that hasn't started in a few weeks. And then you have Matt McGloin to where it's just taking, you know, a little bit of his psyche away because now it's the last game of the season. He goes into the offseason wondering what if. You know, I think it was just a weird move for Dennis Allen, but, you know, it's been a long, weird season. So, you know, we'll see.
Let's head on out to the holysmokednuts.com phone lines and welcome in Tony Ventrella, our big-time guest number one here tonight. Tony, thanks so much for joining us. You are the digital media host at Seahawks.com. A pleasure to talk to you.
How are you guys doing tonight? Happy holidays in advance to both of you.
Thank you. Happy holidays to you too, Tony. It's good having you on, man. I know that we talked with you a couple of weeks ago in San Francisco. Of course, the Seahawks were in town. And, you know, things didn't go as planned for the Seattle Seahawks. But I don't know. You're probably taking a peek at the game here or listening. You know, it sounds pretty good right now. San Francisco down 10-3 to the Atlanta Falcons at the half.
I love the NFL for that very reason. Obviously, 49ers are expected to come back in the second half. I don't think this is going to last. The Falcons playing a nice Monday night game. They haven't had a very good season, clearly. The Seahawks beat them pretty badly back in Atlanta, I believe, in November. The season's a blur at this point, and it's gone by so quickly. But as you can tell, this league is crazy. And I will say that the NFC West is the most competitive by far, as proven again yesterday when Arizona came to town and just did a great job on the Seahawks. I mean, people in around here in the Seattle area, the Pacific Northwest, are just down in the dumps today. I'm not talking about the team now, the team and the coaches. They're fine. They'll get up for next week against the Rams. But the fans, they're reeling after that 17-10 loss yesterday when so much was at stake. A victory, of course, would have given the Seahawks the run of the playoffs at home and a first-round bye. And I understand that will happen tonight if Atlanta is going to hang on and win as well, but I just don't think that's going to happen. Stranger things have happened, though. The NFL is what makes it so great. You really never do know from one week to the next what's going to happen. You can't, and that's why gamblers get so crazy. I'm not one of them, though.
Well, yeah, so you mentioned the difference week in and week out and how the Seattle fans are responding right now. Do you see that there's a huge difference between what the fans think and how the players prepare week in and week out?
Well, of course. Of course there is. I mean, you got to understand the difference. I mean, that's I don't know what to compare that to, Sean, except maybe this. Maybe you go to – this might be one of the worst analogies I've ever heard, by the way, but I'm going for it anyway. And you might go to a Broadway show, for example, and watch the show and be absolutely thrilled with what you've seen, and you come away talking about it. But the guys on the stage are thinking, whoa, we had an off day here. Nobody noticed it. I think the difference in football is the fans do notice it because it reflects in the score. And but the fans also think of things that the players can't afford to think about. For example, home and away. Players can't afford to feel like they're underdogs in the road stadium. They just can't think that way. You can't go in and plant those seeds in your head. You got to be able to play on the road and at home. One of the reasons the Seahawks are 12-4 is because they're 6-2 on the road this year. Granted, one of those losses came at San Francisco 2 weeks ago, as you mentioned, but 6-2 on the road is going to get you into the playoffs most seasons. And you can't, where fans will always think, oh boy, we're going on the road, we're going to be in trouble. The players cannot afford to think that way. So, yes, there is a difference in the mentality of the fans. And God bless them. They're what support the game. But you can't go by the fans. They're way more emotional than the players.
Tony, what do you think the difference has been this year versus previous years with the Seahawks on the road? Is it just that you mentioned, just their mentality has changed? Because they've had talent, obviously. You know, even going back to the Holmgren era when it was very tough for Seattle teams to win back east, and it seems like Pete Carroll and his coaches have found a way to get over that hump.
Well, there's two things you need. Obviously, the mentality of going on the road, knowing that it's just your next game, that it's the most important thing you're going to do, that the 3-hour time difference is not going to matter. And that's the most amazing part about this season that the Seahawks, and I know the Niners have to go through this as well, as all West Coast teams do, Seahawks played 5 of those 8 road games in the 3-hour time zone. In other words, you know, 10 o'clock in the morning, basically, mentally, physically, 10 a.m. in the morning, and were able to win 4 out of those 5. The only loss was at Indianapolis. So that is a mindset. You need to go into those games not considering that that's going to change the way you play. That's number one. Number two, you better have a good offense and a good quarterback that can think under the pressure of the road stadium. And number three, of course, you better have a decent defense that keeps that home team with all those fans down and keeps that that home stadium as quiet as possible. I will say this, there are stadiums in the league that aren't difficult, that are not as difficult to play at, St. Louis being one of them, because they don't have a very good fan base this year, but their team is so good, it makes up the difference. So it's a tough place to play because of the team, not the fans. Seattle, of course, is tough to play because of the team and the fans. That's a rough place to win a game, CenturyLink.
Tony, what are your thoughts on Russell Wilson as he's about to finish his second year in the league?
Well, I think he's cool under pressure. He is the most studious young quarterback I've ever seen. I know that quarterbacks have to work hard. They've got to study game film more than anybody else. They've got to be leaders. But this guy, you know, after yesterday's game, it was a poor offensive performance, not only by Russell, admittedly, but by the rest of the offense as well. They protected the quarterback fine. But our receivers could never get space. They didn't get open. Russell ran around, got sacked 4 times, and they were coverage sacks. He was at work this morning at 4:45. That's 4:45, you guys,
wow.
In the morning. So he walks into the facility, and who is right behind him but Coach Pete Carroll. Neither one of them could sleep last night. And they, from 4:45 this morning till about 8:30, they sat in the quarterback room and watch game video. That's why Russell Wilson is as good as he is. A, he doesn't let the last game bother him for more than a couple hours, and B, he is the hardest working guy on this team and maybe on any team that I've seen. And he continues to scrutinize his own effort every single day in practice. That's what makes you better. That's what makes you an NFL quarterback. He is, I don't recall his record as a pro. I guess I could add it up, 11-5 last year, 12-4 this year, so there you go. He's 23-8 as a pro, which is pretty good for the first 2 years.
Tony Ventrella, kind enough to join us on the double with the Double S Express. And you can also catch Tony on digital media host at Seahawks.com. I'm sorry. Tony, you're talking about Russell Wilson and Pete Carroll, of course, being in, you know, back at it at 4:45 in the morning. Have you ever experienced a tandem like this, or maybe a team like this that's actually, you know, right after a loss, they're right back at it, right back at the drawing, you know, at the drawing board, trying to make themselves better? Is this a unique situation?
No, I don't think it's unique at all. I think the list could be as long as your arm. You can go all the way back to John Gruden and the quarterbacks that he coached. You can go to Bill Walsh and the great quarterbacks that he coached, you know, Joe Montana and guys like that. You can go back to Mike Holmgren and the Brett Favre years, Mike Holmgren and Matt Hasselbeck. I have to go on for a while to think, but Don Shula and Dan Marino, any great combination coach and quarterback has almost like a father-son relationship. Or if they're closer in age, it's brother and brother. But you've got to be that way. You have to be in tune with your quarterback, and in every way. Obviously, Pete Carroll's more of a defensive coach than an offensive coach. He loves the fact that he's got Russell Wilson, who is sort of an offensive coach, on the field as a young man. So, yeah, it's not a unique combination, but it's a great combination to have a coach and a quarterback that are on the same page.
So, covering the Seahawks like you do, It just seems like these guys really love being around each other. You know, not just on the offense side, the offense, the defense, the special teams, the coaches, trainers, everybody involved. I mean, is that the true sentiment, or do you see little bits and pieces of dissension? Or
no, you don't. You don't, and I'll tell you why you don't. It's in fact, you know what? It's amazing because, especially in the last 3 years. Coach Carroll came in 4 years ago. That first year, one of the first statements he made is, we're going to do this better than it's ever been done before. At the time, some of the players that had been there for a while, they were a little chapped by that statement. They're thinking, wait a second, we just went to a Super Bowl a couple of years ago, and this guy's telling us we're going to do it better than we did before. But then those players, you know, either were traded, retired, or went to other teams through free agency. And John Schneider, the GM, and Pete Carroll, the coach, finally, after, I mean, literally hundreds of moves in the first couple of years, got the team they wanted, including guys like Russell Wilson, Richard Sherman, K.J. Wright. I can go right down the line. Malcolm Smith, some of the low draft picks, some of the undrafted guys like Doug Baldwin, Brandon Browner, of course, has been suspended now indefinitely. But when he was there, he was such a great contributor. And Pete Carroll got the kind of players that he knew would buy in to exactly the philosophy that's working. And once you get that going, then the next trick is to keep it going. Because now you have players like Richard Sherman and Russell Wilson who are going to come up with the big salaries in the next couple of years. So what do? Well, you plug in you go out and find maybe lower draft picks, undrafted people that can become good players, so that if you do lose the top picks, I'm not suggesting they're going to lose Russell Wilson, because they're not, but a guy like Richard Sherman, you never know. In the next couple of years, when he comes up for the big money, somebody's going to want him. He's one of the best corners in the league. The key is to always reshuffle the deck and keep those players coming. You notice what happened with Seattle this year with all the injuries.
Right, at cornerback,
they lost Brandon Browner. They lost, for a while, Walter Thurman. Here comes Byron Maxwell, who nobody had heard of before except the Seahawks, and he's playing just as well as those guys did. So that's the key to it.
And that kid, that Maxwell kid, he's dynamic. I mean, he's not afraid to stick his nose in and lay a heavy hit. And it seems like the Seahawks just keep reloading, like you're saying.
Yeah, and that's been the key. And I think other general managers and other coaches try to get to that. And the ones that are successful in doing that are the ones that win continually. They got the dynasties going. Now, granted, it starts with your quarterback. If you have a Tom Brady, a Peyton Manning, a Colin Kaepernick, a Russell Wilson, an Andrew Luck, you're going to have success for a number of years. But you do have to support those guys. I mean, and let's face it, it starts with the offensive line. Look at the Seahawks, played seven games this year. Seven games. That's almost half the schedule with both starting tackles on the bench. And that's almost disastrous for most teams. And yet, in those seven games, they went 6-1. So, I mean, that's almost amazing. They had to, and that's Tom Cable that gets the credit for that, the former Raiders head coach who's been coaching offensive line in Seattle for a couple of years. And he gets his guys ready. I don't care if you're number three in the depth chart. You're going to be ready to play if number one and two go down.
Tony Ventrella, kind enough to join us here on the Double with the Double S Express, Sean Wally and Sean Boyd. Tony, you've covered so many Seattle Seahawks teams over the years in your sports broadcasting career in Seattle. Have you covered a better Seahawks team throughout the years?
That's a great question. That's a tough one. I think I heard Steve Rabel talk about that the other day on a radio station in Seattle, and I'm trying to remember what he said so I can copy him so I don't have to come up with my own answer here. No, I'm kidding. The 2005-06 team, the Super Bowl team led by Matt Hasselbeck and Sean Alexander, and, of course, Walter Jones and Steve Hutchinson and those great offensive linemen and a very good defense, that was a very good team. I do believe the difference is the defense. I think the 2013 Seahawks defense is much better than the 06 Seahawks defense. And I think the offense is as good. So I guess that answers your question. I think this is the greatest Seahawks team that's ever come down the pike, as proven by the fact that they've their first team to go 7-1 to start the season, the first half. The first team, there's the first team to do a lot of things, but they're certainly not the first team to win 13 games because they haven't done it yet. And the 06 team did that. The 05 team, that is. Seahawks need to win against the Rams to go 13-3, and that would equal the record of the Super Bowl team. But, yeah, I think this is a better team.
Tony, in all your years in the sports broadcasting world, what are some of your fondest memories, whether it was events or interviews with certain coaches, players, just some of your fondest memories in your days throughout Seattle and everywhere you've covered sports in the country?
Well, it goes back to, I'll give you a couple right off the bat. You know, Joe Montana, one of the greatest quarterbacks in the history of the National Football League, played for San Francisco, many great moments in Candlestick Park, which, of course, has its swan song tonight. Joe Montana, let me paint the picture for you. I'm a young sportscaster in Fort Wayne, Indiana, the 98th market, my first job, very excited. My general manager let me cover one college practice a year at Notre Dame, one at Ball State, one at Indiana, and one at Purdue. So I go to Notre Dame, and the senior quarterback is a guy named Joe Montana. We're going back a few years here. His coach was Dan Devine. And in those days, there weren't the layers of public relations people waiting at the door that there are now. I went to the practice field, and the coach came over to me, believe it or not. The head coach puts his arm on my shoulder, and he says, "I understand you want to talk to Joe. Joe, come over here." He yells over to Joe. Joe Montana walks over, and I do a TV interview with Joe Montana. So that's one of my earliest recollections. I've also had the pleasure of interviewing Muhammad Ali three times. The greats of New York Yankee past, Mickey Mantle, even Joe DiMaggio before he died, and many of the greats. And then, of course, in more recent years, guys like Michael Jordan and, Steve Largent and Jim Zorn and some of the greats. And, of course, working for the Seahawks in several years now, the last 7 or 8 years, you get to meet athletes as they come, former athletes, as they come to the games. For example, Jay Buhner will be coming to the game this coming week. We see, Dan Wilson, Ken Griffey Jr. I've talked to him many times. So it's been a thrill. And I'll tell you what the thrill is for me is not necessarily meeting these guys because they're great athletes, but for the most part, because they're gentlemen and did a ton of stuff in their community. Because to me, that's the most important thing. You can be a great star, but if you don't do anything for the people around you, the big star thing doesn't shine as brightly.
Tony, one of the things that, I've always loved about you, especially growing up in Seattle and watching you on Cairo and King 5 and, I remember at the end of the night, you just stick your hand up with showing five for King 5. And I was like, man, that was so cool. The million-dollar smile is what I always thought. And I always, I said, man, this guy is somebody that I'd really like to pattern. But the way you got into play-by-play and the way you got into journalism was a little different. So tell me how you got to that point, because all of us who are to aspire to be great, I mean, you were running your dad's barbershop, I believe, at one point. Am I correct? And then jumped right into play-by-play.
Barbershop for my dad. This back in Connecticut, and then I actually opened my own shop. I had my own little one-man barbershop in my hometown in Connecticut, and fun, successful business, doing really well. And I was at a high school basketball game one night, sitting with a friend of mine at my former high school, and my friend was the sports editor for a little newspaper, a weekly paper. And he reached out his hand, he shook my hand, he said, "Hey, wish me luck, I'm going into the Army. I'm leaving next week." So, of course, I wished him luck, and then I said, "Steve, I don't want to be rude here, but who's taking your job?" he said, "Well, the funny part of it is they don't have anybody." He said, "Why don't you go to the newspaper office tomorrow and let them know you know all about, sports in this little town of Wilton, Connecticut, and maybe you'll get a shot." So I did. I went to the newspaper office. The editor sat there smoking a pipe. His name was Dave. I said, "Dave, I can write. I know I can write. I've never had a job before a newspaper, but give me a chance, and I want to be your sports editor." He said, "I'll tell you what. There's a game Tuesday night. Go cover this game. Write a story. If I like it, I'll give you the job." So he did that for 3 weeks in a row. I'd come back, he'd go, "Okay, go Friday night. If I like that one, I'll give you the job." And then I figured, after a while, I thought, is this guy just kind of dragging me along here to get a free article? But then finally, after the third article, he said, "You're a pretty good writer for a guy with no experience. Why don't you put my paper together? You're going to be the sports editor. It's a weekly. You only have to work one day a week to put it all together. I'll pay you $25 a week."
Wow.
So on my day off from the barbershop, I was the sports editor of the Wilton Bulletin, and that went on for about 4 or 5 years before I literally did the same thing to a local radio station. Walked in, had made a tape, a mock show, a mock sports show. They listened to it, they liked it, and I got a job. And you know, I from there, television was next, and it just kept happening. And who knows why? Maybe there's a guardian angel somewhere. I did work hard. The competition was tough in those days, but it's the outlets were fewer. There weren't as many jobs as there are today. But you could go in and meet a general manager and shake his hand and meet him in person. Today, I don't think you can do that. I don't think you could go to ESPN, for example, and knock on the front door and say, "Hey, guess what? I want to be a sportscaster." You'd probably be—they'd probably get security and haul you out. I don't know.
Tony, it's been a pleasure talking to you and talking Seahawks and learning about how your career got started. We appreciate your time tonight. And if you want to check Tony out, you can do so on Seahawks.com as he is the digital media host. Tony Ventrella, appreciate your insight tonight.
Thank you, Tony.
Thank you, guys. Have a great time. And again, Merry Christmas. Happy holidays to you and all your listeners.
Yes, thanks, Merry Tony. Christmas. Happy holidays.
Merry Christmas, buddy. Tony Ventrella, a Seattle legend in the sports broadcasting world. Great to have him join us on the HolySmokeNuts.com hotline. And we're going to keep rolling and go right to big time guest number two and welcome in Sam Shane, news anchor at CBS Sacramento. Good evening, Sam. Thanks for joining us tonight here on The Double.
How are things going?
Great, great. Hey, welcome to On The Double with the Double S Express, Sam. Thanks for taking the time out here. I know that, man, I don't know if you're getting a chance to peek at the television or not. San Francisco and Atlanta, it's a barn burner going on right now.
I'm actually watching a little bit of the game as we talk right now. I know that San Francisco just scored, and I see Crabtree just caught one over the middle. So, you know what? I mean, everybody in Northern California was not only watching this game tonight, but they were watching that Seattle game yesterday to see what was going to take place. I mean, what a great rivalry this has become.
Yes, and who would have thought, a couple of years ago, we were looking at the NFC West as one of the, one of the worst divisions in the NFL, and now it has definitely become the best, wouldn't you say?
Oh, I think so. I mean, when you look at, Seattle, look what Arizona did up in Seattle. I mean, their defense was just outstanding. I mean, Seattle has a powerhouse for an offense, and they shut them down. You look at San Francisco, they're a quality team. I think this is definitely the class of the league in terms of any particular coast, and you're right. I think the best teams are on the West Coast right now, and how do you predict who's going to come out of this thing? But I think whoever comes out of the West has a great shot at winning the whole deal.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, you're looking at two teams in Seattle and San Francisco. Since we're talking about those two, you're looking at Russell Wilson, who's done a superb job. Of course, yesterday he had a kind of a tough day yesterday. And then you have Colin Kaepernick. Both of these guys are young. They're trying to, still find their way in the NFL. But at the same time, they see themselves at the pinnacle. And so that's the quagmire of it all, but that's also the beauty of watching NFL football.
Well, it really is. And when you look at the NFL right now and the number of young quarterbacks with promising careers, not just those two guys, but, I mean, Andrew Luck out of Indianapolis, I mean, he's doing great things. He had another big day yesterday, played in Stanford. And, I mean, everybody you talk to or read about who talks about this guy says nothing but great things in his future. RG3 going into the year looked like he was going to be the deal, and now people are wondering whether or not that's going to be the case. But the league has some very fun young guys at quarterback, and I think that that is nothing but good for football.
Sam, you've worked all over the country in broadcasting and originally a Midwest guy. Where do your allegiances lie? Do you have a favorite team in the NFL?
Well, I grew up in Minnesota, so I'm a longtime Vikings fan, and I was, I grew up watching Fran Tarkenton and the Purple People Eaters and Chuck Foreman and all those great old teams from Minnesota. You remember those teams. I mean, and that was, they played outside at the old Metropolitan Stadium, and that was good old football. Like, they still play in Green Bay and Chicago these days, by the way. So, at the end of the day, I'm still a Twins fan. I'm still a Vikings fan. But now, living here in Northern California for some time, I'm a 49ers fan. I lived in Seattle, as you guys might know, for 3 years and worked there and loved it. And, I follow the Mariners closely. I follow, obviously, the Seahawks closely, UW and their program. Of course, you got a new coach there, which I think is going to be really good for them. So You know, after bouncing around the country, you do develop these allegiances with different teams, and so I guess I kind of have to prioritize it, but if, you know, if I'm watching the 49ers tonight against Atlanta, I'm pulling for the 49ers.
So in terms of your Minnesota Viking allegiance, do you think that that's going to get turned around and things are going to get better in Minnesota for the Vikings?
Well, I think as the Vikings have a long way to go. I mean, that's a program that clearly needs a lot of work and a lot of attention. And they have had problems for, you know, a number of years there. It begins with a great draft. And, you know, it's like in baseball, and football is very much the same way. The draft is really important, as you can see in football. And that gets back to scouting and boots on the ground and all that kind of good stuff, the information that you get out of the college draft. So they've got to start there. You know, there are a lot of people growing up in Minnesota who said when the team moved indoors, something happened to them. They became soft. Now, that's a very Minnesota type of thinking because, you know, they're a hardy
right,
people and they're
right.
tough, right? So they always want everybody to think that they're the toughest guy in town. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, look, I think they have a long road back. And, you know, okay, they've got Adrian Peterson and that's wonderful, but you win games with defense and it's been very, very bad for a long time. So I would suspect, I wouldn't be surprised, guys, if we saw a coaching change there, but I think that there are going to have to be a number of changes for them to get back on the right track.
Yeah, you know, I was talking at the beginning of the show. I believe that, you know, Leslie Frazier deserves another year. You know, of course, with the new stadium being built, going back outside, or they'll be playing outside next year. You know, I just think that, you know, Leslie kind of deserves a shot at actually bringing that team into the, you know, the new digs, wouldn't you think?
Well, I would think so, and he seems like a nice enough guy, but at some point in time, you have to sit back and say, okay, what are the results here? And if you've been in charge for 2, 3, 4 years, how much time does it take to turn around, and how much time do you give a person? So I don't know. And what are the cards that he's been dealt? Who were the players that have been drafted for him? Has the general manager made some moves? I mean, I think it's similar to any situation in any pro sports franchise, that the coach basically has to take these players that have been given to him and make this whole thing work. So my guess is, yeah, maybe they give him a year, but I guess it would be his last year if he doesn't, you know, create some results.
Yeah, he definitely has to make something happen here. Of course, you have Adrian Peterson, the staple of the football franchise. And, you know, I just believe that, you know, maybe, you know, hopefully he'll be back next year because I know nice guys, that doesn't mean anything, especially in football, especially in Minnesota and the Midwest. But I believe that Leslie deserves another year to actually turn that program around.
Yeah, that very well may be the case. And then it just depends on, look, they're going to fill the stadium next year because it's going to be a brand new stadium. So they've got about 2 or 3 years where they don't have to worry about selling the stadium. And that's, you know, at the end of the day, pro sports is about selling tickets and about TV revenue. So from that standpoint, they could still put a mediocre product on the field and still get away with it. But after a couple of years, after the honeymoon is over with the new stadium, then you've got to have a product in the field that's actually going to win.
Most definitely. Speaking of new stadiums, and of course you and I, you know, we kind of go hand in hand here. I believe you came down to Sacramento in about 2006. Is that correct?
Yeah, I moved back. I was in the East Coast. I was living in Seattle, and then after Seattle, I moved out to the East Coast, and I worked at MSNBC for 3 years.
Right.
And then my wife and I moved back to Northern California, and I think you're right. I think the time frame was right around 06, yeah.
Yeah, so it was around 06, and at that time, you know, for me, moving down from Seattle to Sacramento, you know, reeling a little bit from the Sonics leaving to Oklahoma City, and that was something that really, really stuck to my craw. And now being here in Northern California and finding a likeness because this is the home team, the Sacramento Kings, kind of give us some insight because you've given some pretty in-depth discussions on the television as far as the Kings situation and how the development has come over the past couple of years or past few years. And kind of give us your take on the whole arena situation here.
Well, you know, the Sacramento Kings fans have really been through a lot over the course of the last, I would even say, 5 to 8 years. I mean, ever since the glory days when there was Chris Webber and, and Petr Stojakovic and all the great players that they had in those great teams. Since that time, the Maloofs, who owned the team, spent many, many years essentially dismantling and not funding the team. They were terribly underfunded. There were lots of players who came and went. Big salaries were unloaded. And these Kings fans lived through all of this, and they saw this franchise in decline. I mean, what was really interesting, guys, was the arena that they played in for so many years was actually deteriorating just as the franchise was. It was a symbol of what was going on within this franchise. So before even the whole Seattle situation came up, there was a move by the Maloofs to try to sell this organization. And they continually said, oh, we love Sacramento, we want to stay in Sacramento. But behind the scenes, they were marketing this team, trying to sell this team to other cities. So prior to Seattle, there was Anaheim. And Anaheim was a big deal. It was on the front blocks, and it came very close to happening until the mayor of Sacramento, a new mayor at the time, Kevin Johnson, of course, who played in the NBA for the Phoenix Suns for many years, went to a meeting in New York with David Stern in attendance and said, I have another potential investor who would like to buy the team, and his name is Ron Burkle. And David Stern, as you guys well know, has probably the greatest poker face in all of sports, and his jaw dropped to the ground in a public meeting, and he essentially said, you've got Burkle. And Johnson said, I've got Burkle. And that was a game changer in the Anaheim discussion. So at that point, the Anaheim discussion gets thrown on the back burner. It does not happen, primarily because Johnson goes to the NBA and convinces them, look, I've got some big money guys who are interested in buying this team and keeping them in Sacramento. So then you fast forward another year, and then Seattle comes into the mix, because the Maloofs then approach, of course, Chris Hansen and some of the other players in Seattle and said, we want to sell the team, and you guys know how this thing all unfolded. But in the meantime, what Johnson was doing here in Sacramento was that he was assembling a list of other potential investors in the event that Burkle maybe would back out, or at least to show the NBA that there's more than one guy with deep pockets who wants to buy this team. And sure enough, Vivek Ranadive comes forward along with Mark Mastroff, who Mark Mastroff made his money with 24-Hour Fitness. Vivek Ranadive, of course, made billions of dollars in the software industry, both of them very interested in buying the team. And so those are the kinds of things that led up to, behind the scenes, the whole Seattle negotiation. So this was something that was going on, and I don't know if people in Seattle know this, but in terms of what was going on in Sacramento, this deal was going on for 2 to 3 years prior to the Seattle thing bubbling to the surface.
Sam, isn't it a bit unnerving that everything has to be so political in these arenas and in these sports deals where so many people have their emotions invested and, of course, their money as well? But that's the bottom line, is the money aspect, and everything becomes political.
Well, look, I mean, we're all big fans of athletics. I grew up playing baseball. I played baseball at the University of Minnesota. I've had a lot of friends who, played in the big leagues. I love sports, and my son and my daughter both love sports. But we have to always remember, as consumers, pro athletics is all about business. It's about putting people in the seats, and it's about selling advertising revenue on television. And that, at the end of the day, is what drives this whole system. And so, yes, it's going to be political. It's going to be business-driven. We have our favorite players, and that's wonderful. But you can't separate those two. And so is it a bad thing that it's a business? Maybe not. I mean, maybe that's an okay thing. But let's just be conscious of what it is, because people are very quick to criticize, well, he's making so much money just playing a game. Well, that's true, but there's demand for that product. And at the end of the day, that's what the free market system is all about. It's like if you're going to buy an iPhone, the price will drive that. Or if you're going to buy, something that Microsoft is selling in the Seattle marketplace, or Boeing, or, you go right on down the list of all the things that are being sold. Starbucks coffee is a great example. In the marketplace, if there is demand for a product, it will drive up the price. And so you cannot necessarily separate the two. That's like saying, well, Starbucks makes a lot of money, therefore coffee is not a good thing. Well, I mean, there are a lot of people who like coffee. There are a lot of people who love football and baseball, and just because there are lots of numbers attached to it with lots of political implications doesn't make it a bad thing. It's just that sometimes I think, guys, we have a hard time separating those two notions.
Some great points by Sam Shane, news anchor at CBS Sacramento. And Sam, in all your travels throughout your career, what are some of your favorite moments in your career, either stories or people you've been able to meet and interview, and some things that pop in your head as fond memories and moments for you?
Well, you know, I've been doing this for 30 years now, and I've traveled in a lot of places, and it's not all sports related. I will tell you this, that my greatest sports memory was I was on the field in 1987 when the Twins won the World Series in the Metrodome against St. Louis. And I just kind of happened to, I guess for lack of a better word, sneak onto the field with our photographer and get some terrific shots. I know since that time that the folks at Major League Baseball have upped their security a great deal, so they'll make sure that guys like me don't do something like that again. But you know, I've had a chance to do a lot of different things. I've interviewed presidents. I interviewed President Clinton. I covered the LA earthquake. I was there the day that the Oklahoma City bomb went off at the Mura building in Oklahoma City. I was there in Montana for the capture of Ted Kaczynski, who, as we all know now, is the Unabomber. You know, there have been lots of moments in my career where I look back and think, you know, you were right there with history unfolding in front of your eyes. Now, by the same token, I've given up a lot of Christmases and Christmas Eves and Thanksgivings with my family and work nights and mornings, and, you know, you work these horrible hours. Because that's what the news business is. So there are sacrifices that are made, but yeah, there have been some pretty remarkable events that I was witnessed, or that I witnessed.
Sam Shane, kind enough to join us on the Double with the Double S Express. If you'd like to get a hold of Sam, email address is sshane, so samshane@kovr.com, or on Twitter @samshane. Sam, you mentioned the Minnesota Twins, growing up a Minnesota Twins fan, and of course following the Seattle Mariners. Maybe you could explain to me having a dog named Fenway.
That's a great question. Hey, you know who named that dog? Honestly, you guys, was my wife, and I was really surprised. We went to the shelter. She said, "We got to get a dog for the kids." I said, "Okay, let's go get a dog." So, and she wanted to go to the shelter, and I thought that was a great idea because there are tons of dogs out there that need a home. And she found this great little dog. It's like a little terrier. And she came up with like a list of four or five names, and she said, "Let's call him Fenway." And we all liked it. And, you know, years ago when we were living in the East Coast, we drove up to Boston and went to Fenway. And I don't know if you guys have been there, but if you've not been there, you got to go. It's a great experience. And I think that just was one of those things where people have commented more on the name of that dog than I can tell you. And so I guess we did the right thing there. But that was my wife's doing.
Well, yeah, I figured I'd throw you off a little bit with that one. But But yeah, Sam, great to have you on the show. And you know, if you want to watch Sam Shane, you can watch, if you're in the Sacramento, Northern California area, of course, CBS 13. And I believe you're on at 10 p.m. and 11 p.m. Is that correct?
Yeah, we are on 10 o'clock on CBS 13. We have an 11 o'clock half hour on CW 31. And then we do a 4, 5, and 6 o'clock newscast on CBS 13. But yeah, we do a ton of news here. We do a lot of news on two different stations. So you'll be able to find us. That won't be too difficult.
Well, thanks again, Sam, for taking the time out. I know that you cover a lot of the news. And, of course, as I said, been following you since Seattle. And, you know, I'll never forget, you know, when I saw you on MSNBC for the first time. And it's always good to see progression. And so, you know, definitely proud of the things that you're doing, and keep up the great work.
Well, thanks very much, guys. It's been a pleasure being with you guys. And anytime you want to chat, just let me know, and we can talk all things Sacramento, Seattle, and much more. It sounds like you got a great program.
All right.
Awesome, Sam. Thank you so much for your time tonight and your insight, and we'll talk to you down the road.
Okay, guys. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. We'll talk to you later.
Merry Christmas. Happy holidays.
Merry Christmas to Sam Shane as he exits the HolySmokeNuts.com phone lines. Sam Shane of CBS Sacramento. Follow him on Twitter @SamShane. Sean, why don't you let everybody know what's coming up right after the break?
Well, when we come back from the break, we're going to catch up on a little bit of this Monday night football action, recap a little bit from the week, and look forward to next week going into week 18 for the end of this NFL season. So don't go away. Keep it locked in. You're listening to the best sports talk on the Double with the Double S Express.
What's my image?
What's my image?
At Images Barbershop and Styles, you get the best cut, the best design, and the best styles in the Sacramento area. Plus the affordable price, along with the fun, family-friendly atmosphere, you'll walk away with a look of satisfaction and the feeling of a new you. Do you have your image?
We have ours!
Images Barbershop and Styles, located at 10040 Bruceville Road, Elk Grove, California, Suite 140. For appointments, call 916-271-0218. That's Images Barbershop and Styles.
Who likes the inconvenience of car repairs? Not only do car repairs take time and money from you, but can you even trust your repair shop? Nate, Dave, and the team at Platinum Automotive Services in Tri-Cities, Washington are honest and trustworthy, and they take great care of your vehicle. From the basic oil change to full engine rebuilds, they do it all. Like the Platinum Automotive Services Facebook page for a shot at a free oil change. Platinum Automotive Services, platinum service without the platinum price.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally and Sean Boy.
Standing in the Hall of Fame. Yeah. And the world's gonna know your name. Yeah. Cause you fell with the
brain. Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally alongside Sean Boyd. And Sean, it's been a great show with Tony Ventrella and Sam Shane as our big time guests here tonight.
Man, you talk about pioneers in the game. You know, both of these guys, you know, I remember watching them, you know, growing up and having aspirations. And, of course, I mentioned Tony Ventrella, you know, with the million-dollar smile is what I called it. And, of course, Sam Shane, he always tells it like it is. You know, he brings it straight forward and doesn't pull any punches. And, you know, great to have both of them on the show.
And, Sean, it appears that we have had a score in the Monday Night Football game to put the Niners even further in the lead.
Yeah, so San Francisco going up, it looks like with the extra point, it'll be 20-10 in favor of San Francisco. You know, one of the things about this game is that you know, Atlanta's given their best. And, you know, San Francisco, they could have easily folded and, you know, said, hey, you know, we'll chalk this up as an L, but man, that's not San Francisco, of course, but, you know, they fought back, and Colin Kaepernick is really showing me a lot, of course, with the 2-yard run into the end zone for that touchdown. But he's shown a lot of poise, standing in the pocket, getting the ball down the field. He's hitting his receivers. With Quan Bolden and with Michael Crabtree being back, it looks like he's 100%. These guys are going to be dangerous. And so they're starting to hit their stride. You know, again, 20-10. It's only in the third quarter, but looks like San Francisco is putting their staple on the game.
And Niner country has got to be happy with that score, but Seattle and Arizona, not so much.
Man, are you kidding me? What a difference a week makes. So here Seattle is, and they're looking like all they have to do is win the game to seal home field advantage throughout the playoffs. And then the Arizona Cardinals come into town. You know, we knew that they were good, and we knew that they had a little winning streak going on, but didn't realize how good they were. And, you know, of course, they handled business with the Seattle Seahawks yesterday. What a difference. I mean, San Francisco fans have come out of – I mean, they're a strong group. The San Francisco 49er faithful is a strong group. But you talk about revitalization all around, and we had talked about this earlier, the difference between fans and players. Well, the fan base in San Francisco has risen probably tenfold. And you should know up there in the Pacific Northwest, Sean, of course, there's things going on up there as far as billboards are concerned. Am I correct?
Yeah, that's a funny item you touch on, because the 49er faithful got together and went to a donation website and asked for donations to put up a 49er-esque billboard in Seattle to fire back at the 12th man banner that was flown over Candlestick, the fact that Seahawk fans were allowed to purchase a brick for the new 49er Levi Stadium in Santa Clara. So there's just jab after jab, and there is now a digital billboard near I-5 that has the 5 Lombardi trophies, and it says "Got Lombardis." But so, here's the interesting point that Seattle and Seahawk fans are trying to state. It's not even in the same county as the Seahawks, and it's nowhere near the stadium or Seattle as it's in Fife.
Yeah, so for those of my 49er fans who are listening now, where Fife is, it's probably about 25 miles south of Seattle at best. It's just a little north of Tacoma. I think that what you could take delight in, 49er fans, is that it's at least on the I-5 artery, to where there's a lot of traffic that goes through, and there are a lot of Seahawk fans that live in the Tacoma, Fife area. But yeah, nowhere near the stadium. You're right.
And Sean, did you get a chance to see just how bad of a weekend it was for sports fans in the state of Washington? You had, of course, as we've talked about, the Seahawks losing yesterday. You had the Washington State Cougar football collapse in the New Mexico Bowl. You had, for the Cougars, it was the trifecta. They had 3 games in 3 different sports on Saturday: women's basketball, men's basketball, and football. All 3 lost. And then yesterday, it's also followed up with the University of Washington losing to Connecticut in basketball. And you add on top of that the Eastern Eagles losing their playoff game at home.
Ouch. Man, you might as well throw in there the University of Washington women's volleyball team in the Final Four, and the championship was at Key Arena in Seattle, and they fell short of the championship there. I mean, wow, I didn't know how many Washington schools fell by the wayside. That's a lot. That's a lot.
That's 7 games in 1 weekend. 0-7.
Man. Well, it's time for regrouping. And if you're a Seahawks fan, don't worry about it. It's just 1 game. I think this is a good thing for the Seahawks to lose to the Arizona Cardinals, Sean Wally, and for this reason alone. How long could Russell Wilson carry on his shoulders the fact that he was undefeated at home? I mean, at some point, that's going to come. Better it happened during the regular season than in a playoff game or at the NFC Championship trying to get to the Super Bowl.
Oh, absolutely. You'd much rather lose in December than January. And we already know they're in the postseason party. It's just a matter of where they fit in the puzzle.
Yeah, and so, Seattle, I mean, these things happen. I get a chance to see all my Seattle friends and fans that, are on Facebook and Twitter, and you would have thought that the world came to an end yesterday. But, again, it's just a regular season game, and we'll see how Seattle regroups from this going forward.
And Sean, it's going to be a great holiday season, great Christmas for you as one of your own returns to the nest.
Man, not just one of my own. I'm having fun, and I can't wait to get off the air here. Christmas always takes a new, it brings a new meaning. And every year there's always some, special moments. And, of course, in the Boyd household, we're an emotional bunch, if you will. And so we create a lot of great moments with each other. And, having my oldest son, Daniel, doing some great things. Of course, he's been on the show, played football for the University of Oregon and doing some great things at the University of Washington right now. So he's home and getting a chance to be with the family. And of course, having, my son Devon come back yesterday from Chaminade University. And, all the boys are here. My little girl, Armani, full of life. And then my wife, Denise, we're just having a great time. And so, of course, you came down, last week and surprised us. And man, I wear this thing every single day. And for those of you who don't know, my broadcast partner here, Sean Wally, the other half of the Double S Express, buys me an Invicta watch, man. And I wear this thing in my sleep. I'm always polishing it. And, you know, it's a great time of the year, man. And I appreciate you. I appreciate, you know, my family, Daniel, Devon, Deshaun, a.k.a. Scooter. Man, this guy's going to be doing some great things, man. And I'm so excited because, you know, there's so much testosterone in the house right now. You know, and these guys are, you know, I feel like I'm the has-been athlete, if you will, because, you know, you see Daniel and Devon and Deshaun and these guys' muscles are popping out all over the place. And, man, I can't ever recall myself having muscles like that. But, you know, Mama is loving it. And, you know, we're just having some fun, and it's a great time of the year, man, and loving the holidays.
Well, definitely enjoy that time with the family and getting everybody back together again, and tell everybody hi for me and tell them to keep doing the right thing, and great things are definitely in the future for them and for yourself, us together, the Double S Express, rolling forward.
You know it, man. Show number 32 in the books, man. And we're moving right along, and it's just been an exciting journey thus far. And of course, there's going to be some more memories and great times to come.
Absolutely. And we've got one more show left in 2013. That will be number 33, our 33rd show in 2013, next Monday night, Sean.
And you know, I we can't leave out our engineers and our, you know, and our staff, Donald Newsom, Doug Newsom. Thank you for the awesome work that you guys do and fixing things, you know, some of the errors that we have and moving forward. You know, it's a great ride for us thus far, and we look forward to continued success in the future.
That's the voice of Sean Boyd in Elk Grove, California. I'm Sean Wally, Tri-Cities, Washington. That's going to wrap up show number 32 here on The Double with the Double S Express. Follow us on Twitter at Double S XPRESS. We'll talk to you next week on The Double with the Double S Express.
Thanks for listening to On the Double with the Double S Express. Join us next Monday for great sports talk and big-time guests. On the Double with the Double S Express.